Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Obviously, the other, you know, big red flag, other thing that's still, you know, hanging off here are two more people. We got Wendy and we got Harvey and we got Georgia saying, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Let's start with Wendy. What new things came out in this trial, in this round, that may, you know, push the everything over the edge for her, where they may end up going after her and charging her? Do you think there was enough that pushes it that far, or did they even need anything to come out in trial? They've just been sitting on it, waiting for this to wrap up.
I mean, it could be all those things. Like, honestly, yeah, there were definitely some new things that came in. I mean, even if you go to Luis Rivera when in his testimony, I mean, mm-hmm. his statement on the stand in this trial was different. Mm-hmm. You know, he firmly hung it on Wendy, mm-hmm. you know, which I'm sure Wendy didn't appreciate Donna's attorneys eliciting on the stand, you know, because yeah. she knew because she had the transcript, you know, mm-hmm. she had deposed him. So she knew that he was going to say that. And then you just had some other damning text messages come in. You have, you know, there's things that came in that I think are going to be able to be used against her that aren't going to fall under the immunity deal that she has, which is use immunity and derivative use immunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always been pessimistic about whether or not they had enough on Wendy alone, but it's always kind of been my theory, and it's the same thing that happened with Donna, is the fact that they now have the two hitmen, they have the go-between, they have the brother who set it up, and they have the mother who paid for it. That's all part of this narrative in a case against Wendy, and it's incredibly powerful, because yeah. the hardest thing for people to even try to reconcile, to get them to buy the concept that there could be a world in which Wendy exists and she has no fucking clue what these people are doing. Like, I get in the debates, and I love devil's advocating that yeah. side of it. You know, it's like, I've like my buddy Jay, he's like obsessed with Wendy Adelson. You know, but I'm like, from the defense attorney's perspective, these are the ways that I would tack these things. Mm-hmm. But when you have the way, like I said, when Georgia knocks down the dominoes and you have that backstory, and then again, you slide in these pieces of evidence, because her driving by the crime scene at a seemingly really inconvenient, inopportune time for Wendy, if you're worried about being arrested down the road, is damning. The fact that yeah. she's changing the kids' names, the fact that you have Lacoste, which to me, it was one of the bigger smoking gun things, talking yes. about her pulling mm-hmm. the art down 4 days before the hit takes place. It's like those types of things, again, in and of themselves alone, if I were mm-hmm. to write them down on a piece of paper and said, hey, Tony, you think we should go prosecute this woman based on this evidence? You'd probably say, well, Can we get more?
Well, yeah, I agree, but I wonder if there's if Georgia has some more things under her sleeve that we don't know about yet. I would imagine. I'm sure.
You know,
because there's so many things you look at here, and you just with what's out there, you're kind of left with Wendy knew something was going to happen that day. That feels like a pretty sure bet to me that Wendy knew something was going to happen that day. What exactly was going to happen that day? I don't know that we know the answer to. Maybe George does. But as far as everything that's come out, it always kind of ends about there. She certainly, the way she was arranging plans, the way she was canceling trips, all of that, the draw, everything points to she knew something was going on. But what did she know was going on? And that's going to be the part that they're going to have to try and prove if, in fact, they do charge Wendy. Do you think charges are imminent?
Stacey, what do you think?
Thanks, Bob. My question is, what kind of immunity do you think she's been granted? Because she's shown up in every one of these trials, has she not?
Yeah.
So to me, I feel like, and I'm not in the legal field, but I feel like they've come to her and said, we've got some shit on you, girl. You got to talk.
Yeah. So
how does that work? Can you explain that part?
Yeah, they've given her in each of the trials what they call use immunity. And use immunity is essentially that anything that she testifies to at trial cannot be used against her in terms of trying to convict her. So, and what derivative use immunity is say that she said something on the stand that was new, all right, that Georgia's like, oh, wow, that's new. And then that particular piece of information leads them to something else in terms of evidence. That is derivative of what she testified to. So they wouldn't be able to use that either. So, but like the main things, but Georgia's very, very smart.
Yes.
And she tailors her direct examinations of Wendy very, very carefully. And what she does is she has Wendy get up there and say these things so that, because Georgia doesn't care if she's going to go after Wendy, Wendy can get up on the stand and lie all day. And Georgia frankly loves that because that is sworn testimony when and if she arrests Donna and they're going to take her to trial, everything she then testified to in all of the prior proceedings that are a lie can come in. Okay. So that like the lies are not covered by use immunity. So like that kind of thing is just, she's played this and it's such a difficult case in terms of Wendy, because they really don't have that kind of smoking gun. They have some incredibly powerful and compelling evidence when you put it together in terms of the puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's just some things with her that if you were to ask me, do I think that at this point in time that Georgia would be able to convince a jury that Wendy was absolutely a part of this? Yes, I do. I really do. And I was not there prior to Donna's trial. But you know, as she keeps building these convictions up and just keeps fleshing out the full narrative and just like little factoids, new factoids come out in every trial. And like you said, Tone, we have no idea what she knows about, because what she knows about Wendy and her involvement, because that kind of stuff doesn't come in at these trials.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how much she has been able to gather. Obviously when she gets Donna's phone post arrest and we heard her say it, her being Georgia talking about when they got Donna's phone, you know, that they were able to get some of these WhatsApp discussions. So Georgia knows what she has.
Yeah.
And she knows exactly, you know, what she needs to get this done. And she's probably going to take a breather. You know, I mean, she knows at this point, Wendy's got the kids. She's not going to be able to go anywhere without the world knowing about it. Like, sure. Wendy is under the microscope So in terms of Georgia handling her other cases that she's got, you know, because Georgia's a busy prosecutor. She doesn't just have the Adelson case. She's got tons of cases that she has to deal with. So, you know, and you earmark that much time. And I'm sure she's consulting with the Markells, you know, and she's telling Ruth, she's like, look, you know, like what is your time frame on this? I mean, are you good if I wait a year? You know, because everybody's like, oh, as soon as the trial's over, they're going to arrest her. I'm like, you just don't understand how this business works. It's like Georgia's a very, very busy person. She's got many, many cases on her dockets. It can't, and the office is only so big.
You know? Yeah, I mean, unless Wendy tries to flee, I don't think that's it's necessarily going to be this week. I don't remember a lie.
How do you remember lies? You know,
that because obviously that was half of her testimony.
No. Some people are very, very good at remembering lies. I got a family full of them.
I mean, but they're always going to make a mistake. Like they might be able to remember like a big lie. I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't do this or I didn't do that. Fine, but when it's a lie where the devil's in the details. No one's that good at it. Yeah. No one. I mean, you know what I'm saying, Stacey? You can, like, if it's a big lie, yeah, all right, you can remember that. But when it is a lie that has details to it and can be picked apart and you start digging in on it, people just are not good with detailed lies. It's hard to remember it all.
So to all of the things that Wendy said, I don't remember to understand. Can that be looked at, or could certain things be looked at as a lie? If they can go back and go, well, look, you said right here, you knew the answer to this question. But on the stand, I mean, I could have said something last week and I don't remember I said it, and I could say I don't remember. And I could honestly be saying I don't remember saying that, even though you have evidence that I did. Is that then a lie, though, if you don't remember it when you're being directly questioned about it?
Only if you can impeach her on it that she actually did know the answer. You know, but like time wise, it has to be more current in time, because I think that there is absolutely a possibility that 11 years ago, shit that was going down that she doesn't remember.
Legitimately. You know? Yeah.
So, I mean, I can barely remember, like, if you were to ask me what I ate last Tuesday, there's not a chance in hell that I'd be able to remember it. Now the counter to that is, okay, well, Bob, you weren't, you know, in the commission of having somebody murdered. So like, that was just a nondescript thing that you did. But I mean, the one thing to me that is somewhat evident is that whatever involvement that Wendy had in this conspiracy, that she certainly wasn't a major player in it in terms of the planning. That seemed to be taken care of by her loving brother and her loving mother. And, you know, so I think that there's this aspect of, because I hope we're going to get into some of the Jeff LaClosse thing. Like, some people are like of the mindset that, like, Jeff, they really like this, that she was trying to set him up as the patsy type thing. And I know Jeff believes that, but and I believe a vast majority of what Jeff says, but I also am cognizant of the fact that Jeff is a man scorned, you know, so you have to factor that in a little bit. Do I think that he's so scorned that he's going to go in there and make shit up? Absolutely not. But do I think that skews the way that he's observing things because he was hurt by her?
Sure.
Yes, of course. What, I mean, things like she took the pictures down.
What blows me away about the whole idea that they were going to try and frame Jeff for the murder of where were you that day and all that, it just seems so short-sighted. Now, I mean, keep in mind, these are the people who put money in the washing machine with Tide Pods. So anything is possible. They don't seem like the wisest bunch of folks. But if you're going to go and commit a murder, I would think you're going to kind of have your alibi plan or your scapegoat or who you're going to blame for this when people come questioning you, if you're going to say anything. And it's not just going to be, well, turns out your boyfriend drove by there the other day. Let's just say he did it. I mean, that just seems to be the thick of what their alibi was going to be if they could have gotten the attention over to Jeff LaClosse.
Yeah, I mean, that's... that's where my problem is with the whole Jeff Lacoste thing. It's like that. It's either the shittiest alibi of all time. I can't make it.
But they laundered money in the washing machine.
she's a very literal woman, Tony. She takes everything literally. But like for the Lacoste thing, I mean, so he's supposed to be traveling out of town and they're trying to just coordinate it. They think that it's going to be enough at any point in time that he just happened to be in the area where this thing went down.
Stunningly stupid.
And what's his motive?
Yeah.
She's already divorced from Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Dan already he's in a different relationship with a different woman. Like what about the situation in and of itself makes Wendy, Charlie, and Donna think that the cops would think that he was a person of interest, aside from him being in town?
I 1000% agree with you. But these are also the people that think no one's going to be the wiser when she's running money through the washing machine, signing 44 checks. All the bump, everything, the litany of shit that you're like, well, this is obvious shit. Like, come on. Like, if you're going to do this, let's at least not, completely, put ourselves out there and show our guilt. There's so much of it. I mean, it's stunningly stupid, but they have been stunningly stupid throughout this entire thing.
Dude, I mean, everybody says that. It's true, but it's really, really hard.
I know.
To get away with a crime like this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yes, dude, it's like easy for us to all.
Oh, sure. I'm sure.
It's, Monday morning quarterback.
It's like they didn't even try. It just feels like they didn't even try.
They got away with it for 2 years before they were able to figure out the rental car situation. And then there's a long, long passage of time where they kind of. In their minds, because when you listen to the bump shit and you're listening or you're reading, either the text or the conversations between Charlie and Donna after the bump happens, and you're sitting there and Charlie's just, it takes him a half an hour to fucking for it to even dawn on him that his mother's talking about this thing that happened with Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean? When you're listening to, because you can read it when they were showing the transcripts of it, where he kind of the light goes off in his head. You know, I mean, they were just I think that they honestly thought that they had somehow gotten away with this.
Well, the investigation, yes, it certainly did take a long time to get from where they started to where they are today. But is that a reflection because the Adelsons were that good, or is that because the investigation was that slow or that bad?
Or
didn't have the resources that it needed to make this move faster? I mean, what is that a reflection of, really?
I think I certainly don't think it's a reflection on a bad investigation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is frankly in a cases are hard to solve. You know what I mean? Like this is where we're not talking about movies here where shit's every click. They essentially had to be able to figure out in terms of using the video of when Dan is driving around and they're able to pinpoint this fucking Prius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they're like, all right, because really that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they talked to everybody initially. They're obviously in the way that victimology works when they're investigating a crime, they start always from the inner circle and work their way out in concentric circles. They're always going to, because usually you're killed by somebody
sure.
So they're always going to start in there. So in terms of the investigation, I thought that they did amazing work.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how much I love the concept of the bump, because it's exactly what that is. We're giving this thing a little bump. We need to get these fucking people talking about this case again.
Yeah.
And it was really an ingenious way to entrap them into talking about this case. With one another. They needed, too much time had passed, and that was such a little, you could have called it the nudge.
Right.
I'm like, wait, are they doing key bumps of cocaine? What's going on?
Yeah.
Or so yeah, I think that it was ultimately just a case that they needed to investigate, and it was going to take time. And then once they got Luis, once they were finally able to figure out who rented that car, which is a lot of legwork. You're watching all the videos from all the businesses and all the areas that Dan was driving. You have you're like writing down and you're trying to see what type of car it is. You're doing your best to try to figure out the year, make, model, all that shit in otherwise pretty grainy videos. And then at that point, you're going to do what they always do, which is go to rental car companies. If you've got a situation where you're thinking, all right, this appears to be random in the sense that we don't think that any of the family members are the ones who pulled the trigger. I don't think that Jeff was ever actually on their radar at all. I think that he was a person that they wanted to talk to for various reasons. But I think he was checked off the list very, very quickly after his interview. So at that point, they're thinking, all right, you know, and like Wendy's shit in her interview, we're like, yeah, there could be a lot of people who want to kill Dan. Like anybody you may give an F to in law school and you can't dismiss it. I mean, I had a client named Anthony Garcia that was fired from his residency in law and medical school. And he came back, he's convicted of coming back and killing the two people that fired him. So people do fucking insane things. So, yeah. I mean, I guess in their minds, but eventually you land on, we're going to go to all the rental car companies. We're going to find out which ones had Priuses or vehicles that looked very similar to it and are similar in color, and get a list of all the people that rented those vehicles. So, I mean, they had a lot of legwork to do and they did it well. And, you know, the problem was that for some of the early conversations, you're just never going to get them because they're just not going to exist anymore. You're not going to have the devices to be able to do the extractions. And it predates like everything going up into the cloud the way that it does now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like there was no way they were going to be able to get back the potential smoking gun stuff that was taking place at the time when they were trying to get it done. Cause I mean, at that point, all they had was really Wendy's phone.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know that Wendy was at least smart enough to stay the fuck out of the fray in terms of the conversations.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The testimony, some of the biggest stuff that I think a lot of us watched, paid more attention to, Wendy Adelson testifying about her mother's controlling nature and all that she couldn't remember. And then Robert coming up and describing Donna's obsession with controlling her children's lives. I mean, what's the psychological impact when the family themselves, the kids of the matriarch, are testifying against their own mother?
You know, there was certainly no testimony that Donna Adelson was like a hands-off, passive family member who just let people live and let live and whatever happens, happens. Really was the opposite of that. And when you're hearing it from the mouths of the children, these are the people who know Donna Adelson best. They've known her their whole lives. And so they've seen this play out over the course of years, and they really didn't have any significant motive to fabricate that fact to anybody. I think the jury just said, gosh, these kids are in here telling us what their mom is like, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve that.
There was a lot of testimony. There was a lot of throwing people under the bus in this trial. More than I was expecting from the enmeshed family or the once enmeshed family of the Adelsons. Wendy being thrown under the bus several times, Harvey even a little bit. Let's start talking about these guys a little bit and what the future may hold for them. Wendy, obviously, she drove past Dan's house the day of the murder, right when it was, you know, shortly after it went on. Police are there. Then she has that TV repair man coming. Prosecutor Georgia Kappelman even made some hints during the during the prosecution here, but staying tuned about Wendy. There was a lot, and then there was a lot that seemed to show that Wendy had some sort of knowledge. Again, this is, you know, kind of our take on it. She's innocent. She's never been charged with anything, at least as of this moment in time. What's preventing charges against Wendy at this point, if anything?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have seen the cards kind of fall one by one in this case. When you have the contract killers, you have the middle person, Catherine, you have Charlie Adelson. He's already down for the count. Now we have Donna. Who could be next? You know, Wendy's boyfriend testified that Wendy told him she was aware that Charlie was exploring all options to take care of Dan Markell, including a hitman. Mm-hmm. So she knew that gosh, her brother might hire a hitman to kill her husband. That's incriminating. And then also the talks of sort of possibly trying to frame the boyfriend, asking him all these questions about where he was that day to try to get things to align in a way Wendy wanted, I think is of course problematic. You know, does it rise to the level of a charge? The charge of first degree murder would have to mean that Wendy knew what was going to happen and provided some material aid to make sure that Dan Markell was dead and that she wanted him dead. That's a tall order. But there are also things like accessory after the fact. If you're trying to conceal a crime, that can be a crime in and of itself. And so I don't think Wendy is completely immune from any future criminal charges, and those could come down the pike based on her knowledge and the actions she took allegedly to perhaps try to cover this up or blame somebody else wrongfully.
Let's talk about that for a second, because she did have some level of immunity here. She testified under limited immunity at her mom's trial. And maybe you can help shed some light on exactly what that means. Can prosecutors still charge her with independent evidence outside of what she testified about, what others may have testified about, what her ex-boyfriend may have testified about? And does cooperation actually increase her legal exposure here?
Yeah, limited immunity is less of a protection than it might sound like, because what it means is that Wendy can't be prosecuted based on anything she said at the trial. That immunity bears no relation to what other witnesses may have said at the trial. And there were some juicy details that came out that could implicate Wendy. And so, you know, even if Wendy might think that she's home scot-free, but I don't believe that's the case. I believe there is independent evidence that can be used to be the basis for a charge, should it be sufficient, and should the prosecutors choose to go down that road.
There's a lot of the ones that stand out to me, and obviously you are the defense attorney, you are the former prosecutor. The vacation issues, where she canceled the vacation with her ex and needed to be there to make sure she could pick up the kids the following day. Their flight was going to land the day prior in the morning. There was no issue with that, but that seemed to be her reasoning to him as to why she had to be back. That day happened to be the day that Dan Markell was murdered. You also have the swimming. Dan saying, I want to see if I can take the kids to go swimming. She initially, Wendy says, no, that's not going to work. She calls Charlie goes, yeah, that might work for you, calls him back and says, you can take the kids to go swimming. I'm going to guess she had some knowledge that he might be dead by then, which is extremely creepy. After that call with Charlie to go and change your mind suddenly to say, oh, yeah, go ahead, take the kids swimming. The driving by, going to the liquor store, your kids, you don't know where they're at. You don't seem to show much concern about that. And after the fact, there did seem to be a lot of information floating around that family that may have led her to think, maybe my family did do this, considering she was the first one to raise their name in police questioning. Those are the ones that stand out to me. What say you?
Yeah, I think what we have here is sort of a constellation of different, very suspicious circumstances. And if the boyfriend, Wendy's boyfriend, is to be believed, that Wendy had actual knowledge that Charlie was at least considering hiring a hitman to kill Dan Markell. And so the question becomes, you know, what did Wendy do to make that easier? Did she provide some kind of aid? Did she was she involved in the discussions? You know, there were some discussions about that TV, which I think the jury believed that was code word for information regarding this hit. And Wendy's discussing that. And so, you know, where is the line? How did she cross that line in trying to make this easier and or trying to cover it up and or trying to make it happen? That's kind of the missing link, at least in terms of publicly available information, that would need to be shored up before she could be charged.
Do you think we're getting close? Do you think that they're sitting there, that they're in waiting? Obviously, it took a little bit of time for Donna to be arrested after Charlie's. It took her going to the airport, trying to flee, and they said, well, we got to get her now. It's now or never. Think they're sitting there watching Wendy?
Oh, yeah. I think if they're doing their job, I think they've been surveilling Wendy since probably the very beginning and continuously in an ongoing way. And so we're talking a long time, or more than a decade. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I think they're probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they have wiretaps on her phone or have had that in the past. And then additionally, if I was the prosecutor and I really wanted to get Wendy, what I would try to do would be to establish this alleged framing of the boyfriend and Wendy's intent to do that. If she had even if she didn't frame the boyfriend, if she had a intention to do so and perhaps had a conspiracy and agreement with one of the other Adelsons to try to accomplish that, even if the framing didn't work, that itself could be conspiracy as an accessory after the fact. It could be conspiracy to obstruct a police investigation. There are a number of options the prosecutors still have in terms of possibly viable charges.
Yeah. Stacey?
I'm wondering, like, I'm trying to figure out Wendy in this whole thing. You know, we had some people who were thinking in our chat room that Wendy was the mastermind of this. Let's just say that was what really was going on here, which I don't think it is, but some people think it is. Did they save the best for last? Do you think that that's a possibility? Like, she is the mastermind here and we're going to nail her last. We're going to get all the other pieces leading up to her. Is that a possible scenario?
It would not be unusual at all. In fact, it would be kind of consistent with how prosecutors often go about approaching a multi-defendant murder conspiracy. You try to get the predicate parts in place. You get all of your pieces, all your ducks in a row, and they've secured 4 or 5 convictions, they've convicted 5 people already. And so sometimes you secure all of those things, and then you maybe even go back to those folks and you say, hey, look, if Wendy was really behind this, and we're just talking hypothetically, I'm not claiming she is, but if she's really behind this, why don't, you know, Donna, you tell us a little bit more. Do you want to spend the rest of your life in prison for your daughter if she was really at the helm of this? Same to you, Charlie. What do you think about that? And they sort of build up to this grand finale of going after the head honcho, and wouldn't be surprised if that's the approach that they're considering, if they have that evidence and if they believe that that's what happened.
We may have a series finale on our hands. This is just season 4. This is like Ted Lasso, man. The next season is coming.
It's coming. The teaser's already out on Netflix. The trailer's out. Donna did not testify in this. And I'm wondering if there's a reason for that. I'm wondering if her testimony, if her verbally throwing Wendy under the bus, if she were to do that, if her verbally throwing Harvey under the bus, the few that are left out here, if she is holding those cards and waiting for being behind bars in prison for a little bit, that she can raise her hand and go, oh, you want to get Wendy? I got some information for you. Kind of playing the cards that the jailhouse snitches did. Is there any room in this drama for that to happen, for Donna to try and come back with something that will give her some sort of cushion behind bars, lesser sense, something where she can play those cards at some point?
You know, I think people who have watched the trial have fairly observed that Donna, it can be rather conniving. Mm-hmm. She has some, you know, there's some machinations going on up there in terms of protecting herself and in terms of trying to get what she wants. So would it make sense for her to keep, you know, one or two cards close to the vest in the event that something goes really horrible at draw, which it has for her? Yeah, that's not surprising. And she might have more information on the inside, and that could mitigate her sentence. You'd be surprised how motivated folks can be once you're in a box with a bunch of other scary people, and how badly they want to get out.
Do you think that's going to happen? Are we thinking too much? Are we giving Donna too much credit? I mean, this is a woman who laundered money in a washing machine.
Literally.
So is she thinking that far ahead? Is she thinking that this is a great idea? Obviously, she's conniving. She's evil. She has no soul. She has no empathy for anybody other than herself. That's pretty much established. But is she wise enough to play that card down the road? Or do you think she chose not to testify for any other reasons?
You know, there are certainly other plausible explanations as to why she didn't testify. You know, we talk about the paper trail, the payments to Meg Bonua, and from the Adelson Institute when Meg Bonua wasn't working there. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, she was the intermediary for a murder for hire plot involving the Adelson family. So, you know, it'd be hard to be peppered with questions from a seasoned prosecutor about that. There are communications between Donna and Charlie that are problematic. There is sort of coded language that it would be hard to kind of explain on the witness stand. So I think there are other plausible explanations, but also maybe she was keeping some information for herself and saying, hey, I don't want to implicate my family if I don't have to, but if I get convicted, I might have to.
Do you think they're all for themselves at this point? Is the bond broken? Just judging by the amount of throwing under the bus that seemed to happen here? Obviously, Donna didn't testify, but the throwing of the bus, you know, came in the form of, you know, her attorney, Tom Petty, throwing everybody under the bus.
Yeah. You know, certainly this family has been shattered. There's, you know, they may have been close knit and they certainly had some success as a family, monetarily and otherwise, but now it is just in shambles. And with two of the main Adelsons in prison and other Adelsons potentially in the crosshairs, going to depend on what evidence there is. I'm not sure they're out, you know, looking out for one another, you know, all for one and one for all. I think it's all for me, and that's how it's going to proceed as things get even more tumultuous with these prison terms.
The other one that you're talking about that is behind bars, the other Adelson, Charlie, he is behind bars. We were thinking maybe he'll make a surprise cameo appearance in this season of the Adelsons on trial. He did not. He stayed behind bars, never showed up. Why do you think that is?
You know, I would have to check on the exact status of his appeal. I don't remember exactly where it was at the time of the trial. If the appeal was still pending, or if he still had what's called a habeas corpus appellate attempt that can sometimes be brought after a direct appeal is denied. If he had any chance at all of a legal means of getting out of prison through the courts, then he would likely invoke his Fifth Amendment on the stand. He would likely say, hey, I can't talk about anything incriminating or that could be incriminating or ask questions that could elicit an incriminating response because I have these appeals to worry about and I've got to cover my own behind. That could have been what's going on, but he did testify in his own trial. And so there is a transcript of, you know, everything he said. So it's a little bit unclear as to why he didn't testify. It might be a Fifth Amendment thing.
Did the trial do anything to hurt or help his appeal chances?
Oh, dear. Well, you know, kind of depends on the judge who would be hearing the appeal because, you know, one judge could look at it as, oh, my God, you helped your sister's husband get killed. And then not only that, but you involved your whole family in it. And your mother, who's like this woman who's, you know, elderly at this point, is going to have to spend the rest of her life in prison. You're a monster. On the other hand, a different judge could look at it and say, if we're talking about the total amount of responsibility in this case, we just added another person who was, you know, arguably kind of orchestrating this and really wanted it to happen, does that diminish Charlie's responsibility? Can he argue that, hey, this was a really toxic family situation, but really my mom was more responsible than me. I'm less culpable. Can I get less time, please? I think either of those are possibilities, depending on how the appellate judge looks at it.
Yeah. Harvey obviously was touched on several times. I wouldn't say quite as much as Wendy in this trial, but we certainly saw him sitting there throughout the entire case, looking like the Jeff Dunham puppet character. But he was there. He also, from what we understand, and we didn't learn a ton about the context of the conversation, but he did communicate allegedly with Sigfrido Garcia, the killer, right around the time of the murder. That fact that exists, he was on the ready to get on the plane too and flee. Why is there nothing here on Harvey? Is he just going along as this spouse that's completely oblivious to what his wife was up to?
You know, this trial really illustrates how additional evidence can come to light that may further implicate someone that the public was largely unaware of. Like you said, why in the world is Harvey in the digital forensics for one of the killer's phones? Why would they be talking? What would they have to talk about? What mm-hmm. other connection does Harvey, this sort of older gentleman, have with the Latin Kings gang who pulled off this assassination of Dan Markell? You know, that's a real serious question. The possible consciousness of guilt leaving with Donna on a one-way ticket to Vietnam, a non-extraditable country, is suspicious. I wouldn't be surprised if the prosecutor goes back to that Latin Kings member and says, hey, I got to know more about what you talked about with Harvey and mm-hmm. what his role was, and you're going to have to expound on that information that came to light at trial.
How many cards do you think Charlie holds right now? Is he the first Adelson to go down, but is he the one at the end of the day who's going to be holding the strongest card to say, hey, guess what? Y'all want information on Dad? You want some information on Mom? You want some stuff on Wendy and anybody else that I can help you with? He seemed to be very much in the know on all of everything that was going on. He was a key player in the whole damn thing. Could that give him any sort of leverage in court? And if so, being involved with a murder is a pretty big deal. But what kind of bargaining chips or what could the prize be for Charlie if he were to start flipping on everyone?
Yeah, you know, like I said, there's sort of the Adelson camp on the one side and then Magbanua and the Latin Kings killers on the other side. But the person who's close to both sides is Charlie. We didn't see that with Donna. Donna didn't have a ton of direct contact with the Latin Kings and Magbanua, except for the paper trail. But that being said, Charlie's in the middle of all this. He's meeting with Magbanua, and he appears to have the most knowledge of what's going on. And so could he have some sort of missing links that the prosecution might not be aware of yet? Could he use those missing links to try to improve his situation in prison? We saw Ghislaine Maxwell in the Epstein case be interviewed by the DOJ, and then she got sent to a cushy, you know, white-collar resort prison. Mm-hmm. And so there are moves that can be made behind those bars, depending on the information Charlie might have.
Go ahead, Tony.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Stacey.
Well, if they were to offer some of those things to Charlie, do they follow through on that? Do they get their information then go, yeah, we're good. You can stay right where you are. I'm just wondering how that works.
How that works can be a very informal and uncertain process. You know, at this point, the government holds all the cards, or most of the cards in Charlie's case. And so, it would be, best practices would be for him to get an attorney to approach authorities and say he has this additional information and you don't disclose all of it. You don't disclose the details, but you give a vague sense to what it is. And this is what Charlie wants. Is this something the government might be willing to agree upon? And you can even have what are called written proffer agreements that outline the obligations of both sides. Sometimes there's just an informal handshake agreement. And when that happens, there is a lot less certainty, a lot less way to legally compel the government to uphold their end, or even the inmate to uphold their end.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.